Ms. Korch, would you please call the roll? And wake me up while you're at it.
Yes, ma'am. We're not on. Okay. Board Member Durham.
Here.
Board Member Flores. It's not here yet. Board Member Goff is not here yet. Board Member Mazanek.
Here.
Board Member McClellan is not here yet. Board Member Rankin.
Yep.
Board Member Schroeder.
Here.
Okay.
Would you be kind enough to call us into exec session?
Quorum is present.
Thank you, Board Member Durham. Quorum is present. An executive session has been noticed for today's State Board meeting in conformance with 24-6-402-3A CRS to receive legal advice on specific legal questions pursuant to 24-6-402-3A Roman numeral 2 CRS and matters required to be kept confidential by federal law or rules or state statute pursuant to 24-6-402-3A Roman numeral 3 CRS.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We are back from our break. I'd like to recognize that since roll call, recognize the arrival of Ms. Goff, Ms. McMillan, and Dr. Flores. And we'll proceed to item 4.01. We're all ready. Staff is here.
3.01.
No, it's been changed to 4.01.
Oh.
I've had
I got it right here. 4.01, I'm with you.
4.01. State Board will now consider and adopt a final written determination for the accountability recommendations concerning Aguilar School District and Aguilar Junior Senior High School, case number 17-AR-07. Public testimony will not be heard at this time. However, department staff, district staff, and legal counsel are available to only answer any final questions we may have. Neither the department nor district may provide any additional information unless requested by the State Board. So welcome. I believe the district is in the ether on the phone. Good morning.
Yes, ma'am. We're here.
Hi. Welcome. Colleagues, questions for the order for Aguilar in Aguilar High School?
Move the adoption of the order.
Board Member Durham, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll move the adoption of the order in that is contained in our materials. I'm trying to figure out how to reference it.
The order.
Oh, well, I don't have that. So. I don't make Let's see.
You have a bad agenda.
I move to approve the final written determination as proposed by the department and the district to direct Aguilar School District and Senior and Junior High School to implement its pathway proposal for its external management pathway with Generation Schools Network as filed with the State Board on April 14, 2017.
Thank you. Mrs. Cordial, would you be kind enough to call?
Member
Durham. I can say something.
I'm sorry.
Okay. I can say something.
Okay.
One more thing. Within 30 days of receiving a copy of the written final determination, the district or institute shall agree to implement the directed action pursuant to terms to be specified in a revised version of the accreditation contract. Signed copies of the revised contract will be made available to both parties. Mrs. Cordial, now would you be kind enough to vote?
Board Member Durham.
Yes.
Board Member Flores.
Yes.
Board Member Goff.
Yes.
Board Member Mazanek.
Yes.
Board Member McClellan.
Yes.
Board Member Rankin.
Yes.
Board Member Schroeder.
Yes. Thank you, folks, very much, and good luck. Next item is 4.02. State Board will now consider and adopt a final written determination for the accountability recommendations concerning Adams 14 School District and Adams City High School, case number 17-AR-10. Public testimony will not be heard at this time. However, the department staff, district staff, and legal counsel are available to only answer any final questions we may have. Neither the department nor district shall provide any additional information unless requested by the State Board colleagues. Colleagues, do you have any questions? Comments? Board Member Goff. Sorry.
Well, first of all, I'd like to express appreciation for the work, months, years, perhaps, that has gone into devising the plan. I continue to be pleased and privileged that I have the chance to interact and represent Adams 14 schools, districts, and the community, the district and the community. I am hopeful. I am optimistic. I am very firm and forthright in my confidence that this is a good plan, that you have taken all the necessary steps to interact well and in new and different ways with your communities. I think that is something that I trust you are focused on continuing and picking up as well. I always come back to where the real power lies, and the real power is in the minds and hearts of everybody involved. And in this case, I think the thrust of that really does rest with your students. I think they have been instrumental in guiding you through the past several years and in setting the proper tone and the atmosphere for continued leadership on everyone's part, including those students themselves. So I wish you the best of luck. I wish you hard work and dedication, and know that the State Board and the Department are both in your corner as you proceed. So, thank you.
Any other comments? Board Member Rankin.
Thank you. I appreciate what Board Member Goff has said, and I think a lot of the success of students is dependent upon the leadership, and I thought when you presented, you showed great leadership, and again, I wish you all the best of luck, because it is the students that come first.
So let me move forward then. Within 30 days of receiving a copy of the written final determination, the district shall agree to implement the directed action pursuant to terms to be specified in a revised version of the accreditation contract. Signed copies of the revised contract will be made available to both parties. Best wishes. May I have a motion, please? Board Member Rankin.
I move to approve the final written determination as proposed by the department, district, and beyond textbooks to direct Adams 14 School District, Adams City High School, to implement its revised pathway proposal for its external management pathway with Beyond Textbooks as filed with the State Board of Education on June 6, 2017.
Second.
Ms. Gorgel, would you please call the roll?
Board Member Durham.
Yes.
Board Member Flores.
Yes.
Board Member Goff.
Yes.
Board Member Masnack.
Yes.
Board Member McClellan.
Yes.
Board Member Rankin.
Yes.
Board Member Schroeder.
Yes. Thank you very much. Best wishes.
Thank you so much for allowing us to have this partnership, and we hope to bring you great news and by the end of next year.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you.
Item 4.03, accountability recommendations. The board shall now consider and adopt final written determination for the accountability recommendations concerning Bessemer Elementary, Heroes Middle School, and Risley International Academy of Innovation. Case number 17-AR-06. Provide me some input with the. Should we wait?
Wait.
Peter, I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
She was. She's on her way here because they were planning for 10 o'clock based on the conversation yesterday. So
right.
I think if you don't mind, can we try and see if we can get her on the phone just so she can listen?
Is that okay? I'm happy to wait till 10.
Let's wait till 10.
Yeah. So scratch that 4.03.
Sure.
So every one of my numbers is off today. Is that correct?
Fine. I have a revised copy for you.
I know, but that's already taken a trip on my desk. So I'll just change all the numbers.
No lottery tickets for you.
Oh, here's that. Yeah. Okay, but I'm going to move on. Thank you.
So those are all in there.
Oh, they're all new?
Like, I've reprinted everything to help my set for you.
Okay. I'll figure this out.
We could do ones that were able to move as Title I.
Which one are we doing?
I think staff.
Do you want?
Well, item 11. 0.01.
We might be able to do.
It's they've now all been renumbered though, right?
Yes.
To the new.
So it's 11.
It's the revised agenda that we placed in front of you this morning has the accurate numbers.
Yeah, but they're out of kilter with the.
Pueblo's parking right now, so we can just jump back to that item.
So it'll be item 10.
Okay. Should we take like a 5-minute break, perhaps, board member or
sure.
Madam Chair? Thank
10.01.
You.
10.01, what are we doing?
We're taking a short pause. Sorry for the delay. We'll try to be professional now. State Board will now consider and adopt the final written determination for the accountability recommendations concerning Bessemer Elementary, Heroes Middle School, and Risley International Academy of Innovation, case number 17AR06. Public testimony will not be heard at this time. However, department staff, district staff, and legal counsel are available to only answer any final questions we may have. Neither the department nor the district may provide any additional information unless requested by State Board. Folks, do you have questions or comments? Colleagues, I mean. And thank you for coming. I'm feeling kind of bad about this, but thank you. No one has any comments to make? All right, I'm going to make
a comment. We have a motion first. And
you want a motion first? Well, first let me read the 30-day thing, thingamabob.
All right.
Within 30 days of receiving a copy of the written final determination, the district shall agree to implement and the directed action pursuant to terms to be specified in a revised version of the accreditation contracts. Signed copies of the revised contracts will be made available to both parties. I'm going to need 3 motions. Should we just do these one at a time?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Board Member Rankin.
I move to approve the final written determination, version B, as prepared by Council to direct Pueblo School District to implement its innovation plan with external management from the Achievement Network for Bessemer Elementary.
Thank you. So I would like to make a comment or perhaps an explanation, given the challenges that we have presented to Pueblo. When you first came in April, your proposal was for at least 2 of the schools to become innovation school, and the 3rd one was to be an innovation school. That, if I'm not mistaken, that had been part of the state review panel's recommendation, et cetera, and there were some discussions about management. We felt that you weren't far enough along on the efforts to become innovation schools, and that was kind of what we sent back, the direction that we sent back. And we were not as emphatic about the management piece as you heard us yesterday. And the reasoning is sort of the realization that in your district, you seem to have a lot of new principals, new teachers, etc. And one of the comments that we had heard from the state review panel was the expectation that it's an experienced staff that is ready to engage in innovation alone. And it's for that reason that the board felt that we needed to sort of ramp up, as, and you guys to some extent did as well, to ramp up the input from management so that you have that outside experience available as well as what you have centrally. Because in innovation, it's not really supposed to be all about central administration. Innovation suggests a high level of independence. So I wanted to give you that explanation as to where our minds wandered to in the hopes that that is supportive of the work that you all did. You came forward with an awful lot of work, and I don't want you to feel that we dismissed that work. We just sort of we're a little bit concerned with the kind of level of turnover that you tend to have anyway and that you certainly have had in these three schools. Just wanted to explain that. I'm ready for you to please call the roll for Bessemer.
Did we not get a motion?
No. Oh, Mr. Durham.
We didn't get a motion?
Yes, we did.
Yeah, we did. I just wanted to comment.
Please do. We're commenting.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I think we're near the end of this process for all of the schools. I think this is the last three that we're going to deal with in this cycle. And it's I'm not certain whether any of these solutions that we have tried to work with on various districts are going to be successful. We certainly hope that they will be successful. But I think I've concluded after spending a great deal of time looking and hoping for some sort of secret sauce or silver bullet to solve the problems in education. Dr. Anthes has told me to just stop looking because there isn't one. And I think the reality is that the chances of improving our education system we're down to hard work and trying different innovative ideas. But I think there's one other element that that in my 43 years of public service off and on that I've observed about education, and certainly it's not the only area of public policy where this shows, education and education policy really should be about the well-being of children. As a regular and practical matter, it is anything but. School boards have lobbyists that regularly prove they have no interest in the welfare of children. School executives have lobbyists that regularly prove that they really don't care about the well-being of children. And teachers' unions have children who regularly demonstrate that they also put the interests of their members well ahead of the interests of the children. And I think until we have education policies and people of goodwill in those positions who recognize that their first duty is to put the interests of the children first, and if they really are professionals, they recognize that the definition of a professional is an individual that puts the interests of their clients ahead of their own personal interests. And that's what we don't see in education, and I think that's why we fail to make progress. And if there is any evidence of in the last 50 years, really, of education, progress has been, from a measurable perspective in terms of test scores and those obvious things, almost non-existent. With all of the resources and all of the pain and suffering and all of the reforms, if you look at the result, I know Dr. Schroeder and I have disagreed about this. She thinks there is some progress, but no one could characterize it as dramatic improvement. So I hope that that the one thing that this process has done has been able to shine a light on schools that need to do better, and that I hope that they will do better. I think it's been particularly disappointing with Pueblo to look at some of the press accounts and really what I consider to be the defense of the indefensible. I mean, the practical side of this is that it's not gone well in Pueblo, and somehow this board has come into some criticism for trying to do something about that, and that's unfortunate because I do think it really is a little bit like the 12-step program. Step one is recognizing you have a problem, and I think, at least based on the press accounts and the editorial, there's a clear lack of understanding of that. So I'm going to vote for these three solutions in the hopes that they will be implemented by people of goodwill who really want to make a difference for children. Thank you.
Thank you.
I want to say,
Board Member Flores.
I think you missed the colleges of education who train teachers, and I think they have a part in this. And for some reason, I think that here in Colorado, we don't have them as much as leaders as they should be. And I hope that they kind of take the aegis and will rise up in this area and not only have, you know, better programs, change programs, and at the same time recruit teachers, large volumes of teachers that we so need in our state to teach our children. And for that population, their client is not the student at that institution. And I've heard that a lot of times from institutions of higher education. Their client is the public school student. Those little kids should be the clients of all those universities. Thank you. And thank you for your work.
Thank you. Any additional comments? Please note that these are the comments of us as individuals. I will say that it's my belief that at this table we do try very hard to focus on the students, and we sometimes have to remind each other. But now that we've blasted everybody else, shall we take a vote?
I would just say one other thing. I think, you know, we all have to look in the mirror and see if we do that, and I'm sure there's plenty of blame to go around, including at this dais. So
exactly.
I don't exempt myself necessarily from the criticism.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Cordial?
May I ask who seconded the vote? Thank you. Board Member Durham?
Yes.
Board Member Flores?
Yes.
Board Member Goff?
Yes.
Board Member Masnak?
Yes.
Board Member McClellan?
Yes.
Board Member Rankin?
Yes.
Board Member Schroeder?
Yes. So is there a motion on the table for Heroes Middle School, please? Board Member Rankin.
I move to approve the written final determination. Version B is prepared by Council to direct Pueblo School District to implement its innovation plan with external management from the Achievement Network for Heroes Middle School.
It's a proper motion.
Second
by Ms. McClellan. Ms. Cordial.
Board Member Durham?
Yes.
Board Member Flores?
Yes.
Board Member Goff?
Yes.
Board Member Masnak?
Yes.
Board Member McClellan?
Yes.
Board Member Rankin?
Yes.
Board Member Schroeder?
Yes. Board Member Rankin, a motion for Risley International.
I move to approve the written final determination. Version B is prepared by Council to direct Pueblo School District to continue its innovation plan with external management from the Achievement Network for Risley International Academy of Innovation.
Second. Thank you.
Second.
Whoops, we got 2 seconds.
Did you want to say something?
Mrs. Cordial, would you call the vote, please?
Board Member Durham?
Yes.
Board Member Flores?
Yes.
Board Member Goff?
Yes.
Board Member Masnak?
Yes.
Board Member McClellan?
Yes.
Board Member Rankin?
Yes.
Board Member Schroeder?
Yes. Thank you. Best wishes. Godspeed. Are the capital construction folks here?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Are we ready to go on, folks?
Yeah.
Item 5.01. Mm-hmm. Next item on our agenda is an update from the Division of Capital Construction. Commissioner?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Invite Jim Owens, the Director of the Division of Capital Construction, to come up, and we'll also have some board members from the BEST program. Tim Reed, Chair, and is that what we have? And Rod, doesn't look like Tim and Roger. Okay, Cindy, it looks like we have a little, oh, there we go, Cindy, from the Capital Construction Board. I'll turn it over to you, Jim. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, members of the board. Good morning, and thank you for the opportunity to update you on the three programs administered by CD's Division of Capital Construction. I do want to apologize, since we're running a bit early, that our chair, Tim Reed, has not arrived yet, but he should shortly. And Tim also will have a role in presenting the recommendations from the program. So as soon as he does, I'll recognize him. But I'm also pleased to be joined by two board members who are appointed by the State Board of Education. Immediately to my left is Cindy Wright. And Cindy's been a really significant member of the board and has reviewed several cycles, including this last one. And then next to her is Roger Good, one of our newer board members. And both will be available to answer any questions that you may have as we go through the presentation. There's also a third board member that's appointed, Ken Happenstall, who unfortunately, due to prior commitments, was unable to attend this morning. But Ken is the third member from the state board. And of course, the board is rounded out by three other appointments by the governor's office and also three members appointed by the General Assembly. So it's a nine-person board and very, very high functioning and very much involved in what I'm going to present this morning and then what the recommendations will be following this. So I'd like to briefly walk you through the program update and highlight, as I mentioned, the three programs that we're actively involved in. In your board packets, I believe you have a summary memo from me which describes the programs, and what I'll do is just quickly highlight through this PowerPoint the slides that are also in the package that you have. So the first program is the one that I think is the most well-known, which is the BEST program, the Building Excellent Schools Today. And I think most of you know that back in 2008, the General Assembly enacted and the governor signed House Bill 081335, which established a new program for Building Excellent Schools Today, which of course is shortened to BEST, to assist school districts, charter schools, Institute Charter Schools, BOCES, and the Colorado School for the Deaf and Blind, with capital improvements in facilities. The program has really matured over that period of time, and we've now entered the 10th year of the program. This is actually the 10th cycle that we'll be presenting relative to grant award recommendations. This slide depicts the current assistance cycle timeline, and as you can see, this is a fairly busy slide and one that I think underscores how process-rich the program is. A lot of statutory requirements, a lot of rule, a lot of protocols that need to be understood and applied, and from the standpoint of ensuring that applications are reviewed with fairness and equity and resulting in recommendations that they go forward to the State Board of Education. There are a number of milestone requirements that you'll note on the slide, which are particularly important, several of which are connected to statute. For example, what we're doing here today is making a recommendation to the State Board, which is actually an accomplishment that's identified for June 20th. And then in the event that a recommendation is made for lease purchased award recommendations, those also have to go forward to the Capital Development Committee. And pleased to say, we're also on track with the CDC. We're presenting next Wednesday, the 21st of June. So that's exceeding the July 15th requirement that we have in statute. Next slide is, I think, depicts some of the successes in the program since inception. When we look at the number of grants awarded and funded, and this particular slide depicts progress in the program through last year, through fiscal year 16-17. And we'd certainly like to be able to add to that for this year. But pretty significant contributions across the state. And the next slide I'll show where in the state we've been able to affect awards and help the districts manage the work. But very significant in terms of asks. This cycle for 17-18 is actually the largest ask that we've seen from applicants since the program's inception, and we'll talk a little bit more in detail as we get into the specific recommendations. Not only are we enhancing learning environment for the students and staff, but we're also creating jobs in the state that are involved in doing the improvement work and the new construction that is so much needed in the schools. The next slide is a map of the state that depicts where, since 2008, the awards have taken place. And again, this goes back to last year for fiscal year 16-17. But you can see a pretty wide distribution. This depicts the two primary types of grants that are awarded. The one that's more commonly used is the cash grant, and those are in blue. And then in the orange are the lease purchase, and then the combinations. And you can see it's pretty well spread across. I would point out that for what we're about to recommend to you, that we would add 7 additional school districts on this map. So that's really good news when we think in terms of districts that have not previously participated in the program and yet have very significant needs that stood out very strongly when the BEST board did their review on it. This slide depicts in a very quick fashion some of the projects and the allocation based on dollars. I wasn't planning to go into a huge amount of detail on it. After I'm complete, by the way, if there's any questions or comments that you'd like to make, I'm happy to respond to those. But this is indicative of the type of the work that we're doing. The grants are broken into 3 different priorities now, the first being the health, safety, security, and technology improvements that are needed in schools. Those are the ones that get the lion's share of the attention. The second priority are for overcrowding situations where the capacity of the school is inadequate for rapid growth, for example, in the district. And the third is for other. And as you can imagine, given the significant amount of needs and what we see in the way of applications, we're really only able to focus on the priority ones. You know, so you'll hear me refer to the health, safety, security, technology as being the ones that are getting the most attention. So a lot of the building system type work that relates to building life extension for roof systems, heating, ventilation, air conditioning systems, building envelope type matters that principally connect to ensuring that the building is warm, safe, and dry for students and staff. That gets the primary focus. In many instances, the schools are in such a condition that a replacement of the school is called for. So that actually is considered a priority one project, and it's why you see, when you look at the dollar allocation, why you see the new schools, the replacements, the full rehabilitation type projects that are highlighted. But that's not to say that the other work is not important, because roof tear-offs and replacements are vital as we look across the state. I mentioned that the program is pretty rigorous when it comes to the application requirements, and because it is a competitive grant program, it's important for each of the applicants to differentiate themselves, to highlight the urgency, to highlight the needs, to identify proposed solutions, to put together a budget that's thought through. Most of the districts actually perform master planning activities that identify almost in a phased fashion how they would approach doing the capital improvements at their schools and at their districts. And so as we look at the requirements, these are some of the broad categories of what is included in the application, what gets reviewed by staff, and then what the BEST board reviews as they're contemplating the application, and then ultimately scoring the application and then recommending further award activity. I mentioned the types of grants that are included in the program. The two principal ones are the cash grants and then the lease purchase grants. The cash grants are the ones that are the most flexible, and those are based on funding from the Public School Capital Construction Assistance Fund. And as I think you know, the state legislature appropriates annually an amount for cash awards from the assistance fund. And so last year, for example, it was $70 million for cash grants. This year, the one we're presenting is also $70 million. But these were intended initially to be for the smaller projects, the building system, life extension projects, and so forth. but they're not restricted to that. And historically, cash grants have also been used for larger projects, like school replacements, full rehabilitations, and the like. The lease purchase grants are a grant type that we have not used since 2013, in part because the state borrowing authority had already been maximized. So with the action last year by the state legislature to increase that by $10 million, we suddenly had opportunity to consider these, and the BEST board took that as an advisory and decided to borrow about half of the additional increased capacity. So I think it was a very prudent approach, and what you'll see in the recommendations are five lease purchase grants. And lease purchase grants are for the larger projects, which is what they are traditionally used for, the new schools, replacements, the full rehabilitations. The third type of grant, which doesn't get too much use because it's typically under very unusual circumstances, the emergency grants. If a school, for example, is unusable because of some significant event, some catastrophe occurred, the roof has collapsed, so forth, there is a ability to do emergency grants. We don't have much history in those, but that's the third type that we have. Moving on to the second program, which is Facility Insight. This program is relatively new, and it's one that involves doing a statewide facility condition assessment across the state. Early on, when the BEST Act was enacted, there was a requirement to do an initial assessment to look at the facilities across the state. That was conducted back in 2009. But as we know, facility conditions change over time, and we didn't have a mechanism to update the assessment that had been completed. And so a presentation was made, starting with JBC, to present the advantages of being able to develop in-house capability to actually go out and conduct these facility condition assessments, to collaborate with the school districts for all the public schools across the state, and to do this on a three-year cycle. So we began doing this last August of 2016, and it's turning out to be quite successful. We're doing it in a hybrid manner. We're collaborating with a nationally prominent consultant firm who is involved in doing assessment work, and they've developed a lot of the software tools and a lot of the protocols that are used to ensure that the information is collected correctly and accurately, and it gives insight in terms of what the condition of the schools are. Some background on the legislation that went through. In terms of the benefits to the school districts, I didn't mention, but in doing these assessments, there's no cost to the district or to the charter school. It's included. It's done in collaboration with them. Many of our larger districts actually maintain these databases, and so we're working closely with them to import that information to ensure that we've captured that. The information is used for a lot of different purposes. I know a lot of the educator leaders are going to use the information to get a sense of the condition. This information is often used in bond programs when you're communicating with voters about the condition of your facilities. There are a lot of photographs that are taken as part of the assessment, and that information is very useful when it's presented to underscore some of the deficiencies in the schools. We also use the data, of course, principally in the program to help with the scoring and the ranking of the projects. Hey, I'll pause for a moment and briefly introduce Mr. Tim Reed, seated to my right. Tim is the chair of the BEST Board.
Good morning.
Mr. Owens, would you like questions interspersed, or would you prefer we let you?
Your preference, Madam Chair, whatever you would like.
Go ahead.
Good morning. I have a question about the assessments. So the legislature asked for this?
Initially, staff identified the need for it, and it was presented to the JBC with details around what resources would be required, what the outcomes of the program would be.
When you say staff, you mean staff of the BEST board?
Of the BEST board, along with the Division of Capital Construction, CD.
And so when you do these assessments, who do you provide them to? Just to the districts or to?
The information that is collected is being shared on a public web portal, and it's information that's available to the public in general, but it's also provided in conjunction with the assessment process where the district actually has input into the assessment. And so it's a very collaborative effort that results in reports that are provided publicly.
Madam Chair, Ms. Oakes, in our finance department may have something to add here. Thank you.
Just a quick clarification. So as Mr. Owens indicated, staff did present a request to the Joint Budget Committee. That was at the prompting of the Legislative Audit Committee. We had a performance audit of the BEST program, and one of the recommendations from the Audit Committee was that we update the assessment. So we had a facility assessment conducted shortly after the 2008 creation of this. I think it was in 2009. And the audit found that that was out of date and should be updated. And so we had taken steps to approach that in different ways and had presented that to the Legislative Audit Committee that this would be, in our minds, the most efficient way to do it in-house instead of relying on a periodic externally created, so to keep it on a rotating basis. And that was the impetus for us going forward with that request.
Okay, but it's still not quite clear to me. You do this, but you put the you say you work collaboratively with the districts on this, and then it's presented to the public on your website.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how we would access it, is
right.
From your website. It's not something
present,
or it's not at every single district. We can go there for every facility.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thanks.
Proceed, please, Mr. Rowe. Is that okay if he finishes?
Sure.
Thank you.
Okay. So, again, the use of the information is really important, and I think will be very beneficial to a number of different levels relative to the condition of our schools in the state. Another component of the condition assessment is a tool that we call the adequacy survey. And the adequacy survey was developed through an effort that primarily involved staff and the BEST board to identify questions that relate to how does the school facility support teaching and learning activities. And so it's a fairly extensive questionnaire that's developed while the assessor is physically present at the school, and it's developed at the school level as well as at the district level. And it's a really great summary to get from school leadership around how the facility is supporting the teaching and learning activities, how it supports the kids. So it's one that is also being folded into the web portal so that we can see the detailed facility condition information around building systems and also get information about the perspective from the school leadership and district leadership around how the facility is doing supporting it. And of course that information is also used by the BEST board as they're evaluating applications, and it's another tool to help differentiate need and urgency. In terms of progress, moving along very rapidly, we ended up hiring five state assessors and five FTEs plus a supervisor. And so thus far since August, we've gone through more than 5.5 million gross square feet of school space. And the work continues in a cyclical fashion. The intent is to complete our initial effort by August of 2019, the end of that first three-year cycle, and then repeat that cycle. Because as facility conditions change, it's an opportunity to ensure that we're identifying what's changed and making sure that that's captured. So I think it's going to be extremely useful and very beneficial, not only to the BEST program, but across the state for many other uses. The web portal that's mentioned on the slide is where the information is kept. And if you do have a chance to look at it, I think you'll see kind of a sense of where in the state, what the condition issues are at the state level, at the district level, all the way down to the school level. The last program to briefly touch on is our charter school capital construction program. This program actually predates the BEST program and is not technically under the auspices of the BEST board, but it's a program that has made a huge difference in supporting both the district and the Institute charter schools. The program is designed for the charter schools to identify their needs and to be able to fund based on a portion of the state education fund and also a percentage of the marijuana excise tax that's used in the BEST program. So this year it's $25 million that goes to support the charter schools for capital needs in support of maintaining their facilities, but it's a pretty broad program that really enables charter schools to be able to help facilitate their capital needs. And in addition, of course, all of the charter schools are eligible for BEST program participation and certainly do participate in that. I'd like to close with a comment about some of the reports that that CDE provides for the BEST program and the charter school capital construction program. The requirement is to annually, by the 15th of February, to put a report forward to the to yourselves as the State Board of Education, to the Senate and House Education and Finance Committees, and also to the Capital Development Committee. So there's a current copy of that up on the website currently. Also on the 1st of February, we put a report forward on the charter school capital construction program. So both of those reports are up on the websites and they're current. Okay, at this time, I'd be happy to entertain any questions or concerns that you may have. And I'm also joined by Tim Reed and our other board members, so please direct your questions as appropriate.
Thank you very much. Board Member Flores.
Yes, I just wanted to comment about some of the structure, the architectural nature of schools and what I've noticed. I find many schools, and it may be just the area here, that look like penal institutions. I mean, there's a lot of research that's been done, especially lately, on how plants, incorporating plants in buildings. There's, I'm also reading Jane Jacobs' biography, and especially in building and building for humanity, for humans, to be surrounded by beauty. And there's a lot of beauty that we're surrounded with in Colorado, of course. But I'm just thinking, too, about the high school that I went to back in the 60s that indeed incorporated plants, incorporated green things in within the building. And I'm thinking, this is not new. I mean, the research, whether, for instance, that kids do learn, there is a significance in learning when they are surrounded by green things. I think it's something like 25% where kids learn better with
Dr.
green
Flores,
things. And why?
They don't design the buildings. They just provide the funding, right?
Well, but there is a section where they're looking.
As well with the design
team. Do you work with the designers?
Yes.
We work
with the architects
with them in an indirect fashion, but we work very closely with the school districts. We have construction design guidelines, for example.
Right, and he mentioned that.
Oh, okay.
And we have staff who have expertise in architecture and engineering.
Right, and it's just recently, I think in the last month, that I read an article in the New York Times about the greenery for hospitals. If patients can see a green tree outside their window, that they get better 50% of the time. And in learning, which to me seemed incredible, that if they see greenery and nature 25% of the time, you know, learning goes up. So that's significant to me. So I'm sure that your architects probably know this, and I'm hoping that will be part of of what their buildings look like.
Board Member Flores, I would suggest that you visit some schools. I didn't remember in my
report
that I just had the opportunity to visit Montezuma Cortez School District in the last month, and I did have the opportunity to visit with the district and visit two of the schools, and one of them was the best high school. And I have never, my husband and I both were literally speechless.
I must go there then.
How beautiful.
Right.
How beautiful that building is. How much they capture, the windows captures the surroundings of the area. It was, I don't want to say it was fancy in any way. I think it was probably a very utilitarian building, and it was absolutely spectacular. So kudos to, I mean, I can't speak to all. I'm just going to say I've only been in three or four of your schools, and they were not prisons. They were really gorgeous.
And I was mainly speaking about the urban corridor that I'm more experienced with, and just thought that that research on surrounding and surrounding with nature and green stuff was just incredible.
Other questions or comments? Board Member Goff.
Well, I love that topic, but I'm going to just get boring right now. Sorry. Questions. First of all, a memory question. Was there not a statewide tour to get an early read on the condition of buildings around the state? And I'm thinking it was a long time before 2008.
Okay.
It seems like there was like early 2000s, if even that.
2009.
Okay, so thank you. It's, all I needed was assurance that I wasn't imagining this. It was during that time that we started to learn about what really wasn't, but kind of got put across as a burgeoning problem, and that was the asbestos and other effects that it was having on such things. And I remember being, at that time, it was in the southeast corner of the state, and literally saw the schools that were being propped up, the cafeteria ceilings were propped up with gadgets in order to keep as much asbestos from dribbling down on kids all day. It was that's when the state started moving quicker on this, and ever since then the work that the BEST board and the construction assistance groups and legislators and whoever has been contributing, appreciate it. The other question is kind of technical, though. You were talking about the fact that there are seven new districts who this past year took part. They did receive grants?
Correct. Yeah. They were being recommended for grants as part of this cycle.
Right. And is there anything in here that we haven't maybe touched on or I missed about the fact that the reasoning for that and what made it possible, was that in most cases, was that a result of bonds passing in this last election so the match was better accessible? Was it a matter of these are districts that had made applications before but didn't meet criteria? I just was curious as to how the and if it's of import, how many years have any of those seven, let's narrow it to them, how many times before have they applied, been denied, and for what reason? Is there a general pocket of reasons, success or not?
So thank you for the question and comment, Board Member Goff. Relative to those applicants, a little bit of all of what you just said. Several of them had previously applied for grants, weren't successful. I think for this cycle, several of these are actually being recommended for lease purchase grants, and so we haven't done those for several years, so they saw an opportunity submit for that. In several instances, I'm looking at the list right now, several of them have had significant changes in their facility conditions. Some of which was revealed during some of the on-site assessment work that was done. There's a lot of collaboration between division staff and the districts around these in terms of helping them frame the application and providing advice on how successful they might be, since it is a competitive program, to see where that might fit relative to some of the other applicants. So really, several of those, we certainly could do more analysis to look at how many times they've applied previously. I don't have all that handy in front of me. But.
Well, the last really quick one, the charter school construction assistance funding, or is that primarily for startups? Is that the startup pot, or is that operation in general? I mean, construction, but startup construction.
Right. It's actually, they're eligible for a number of different categories for capital improvements, as well as for work to maintain the facilities. They need to identify that they have capital needs initially, and they do that annually. And then the allocation is then based on pupil count. So there's an allocation that's made. They subsequently report at the end of the year that the funds were used, but they also have the ability to carry over the money. So when you look across the charter schools in the state, there's a lot of variation in terms of how they use the funding.
And help me refresh my memory on this too. Is it true or not that the bulk of that aid, that funding, is federal assistance? Is it allocated through our state, to our school finance?
$20 million is from the state education fund, and $5 million is a portion of the marijuana excise tax revenue that comes to the BEST program. So that's $5 million. So the total of $25 million that's allocated annually.
And so the current applicant pool, or and into the future, I hope that the amount, the percentage of the marijuana money available for this is increasing to across the board. Are there more schools that are qualifying for BEST because they actually can get the marijuana assistance, marijuana tax assistance?
It's actually a percentage. The BEST program is capped at $40 million a year from excise, so it's 12.5% of that amount that results in the $5 million.
Right. Okay. Thank you very much.
Board Member Rankin.
Mr. Owens, thank you very much for that report. I know there are a lot of people out there that are interested in this, and the overhead is on the CDE website, and I would refer a lot of our superintendents to take a look at that. Could you just briefly, and maybe one of your other committee members want to tackle this one, just go over the process? So if some community member is listening, what is the process of application and the timeline within a year?
Okay. You like to take that? Or? Sure.
Good morning. Typically, the application process opens in January, and then we encourage, we being Jim and his staff, encourage the various districts to work closely with the project managers, which cover various regions within the state, in the preparation of the application. The application is usually completed by the end of February. And then it's packaged, and then the board receives the application in April, and usually it's about this thick. And we spend basically a month, and then we meet for 2 days in May and review the applications and actually vote on them. That's kind of it in a nutshell as far as what the process is. I think that over, this is my fourth year on the board, and I have seen a steady progression in the quality of the applications. So the message of getting out, meeting with your project managers, and really working closely with the staff is starting to pay off. The other side of that is it makes it more difficult for us when it comes time to make decisions, because we are getting good quality applications.
Thank you. And I have a couple of comments on that.
I'm sorry. Ms. Wright, would you like to comment as well, please?
If you wouldn't mind, I'd like to add to that. So in the process, while it sounds simple that they can begin in January, the process of, let's say you need to build a new school, that process starts well before January, because the district is meeting with experts. They're going over the assessment. They have a master plan in place most of the time, which has taken place 1 or 2 years prior to that. So there's a thought process of getting up to January so that you're ready for that short turnaround of the grant, because there's so many components that play into that.
Thank you, Ms. Wright. I appreciate that. And I assume that everyone that applies has the same questions that they have to address in their application, but it seems that I'm looking at my congressional district, and I see we've got 9, and Congressional District 4 has 9. The rural districts seem to have the bulk of that, and then Congressional District 6 and 7, I don't see any there. Is it just a matter of them not applying? How does that?
So thank you for the question, Board Member Rankin. The process is a competitive one where districts will look at their needs and how they align with the statutory requirements of the program. So the districts that, for example, have overcrowding conditions recognize that they likely would not be competitive, so they often don't apply at all. The ones that have the most urgent needs, the priority one needs, the health, safety, security, and technology, they will, based on a number of factors, whether they've had sustainable bond measures in place, whether they've done mill levy overrides, whether they have the resources in place. The program principally benefits the rural and the small rural school districts, in part because they historically aren't able to sustain the bond program. As DPS, for example, as I'm sure you know, it is sustainable in the bond arena. That's not to say that DPS doesn't have the needs. Mm-hmm. It's just they typically in the larger districts don't participate as much in the program.
Thank you. Thank you for that. And when you get the bulk of these applications, are they divided up among your committee, or does the whole committee receive all of them? How does that work?
Staff tabulates all of the information from the applications in a summary book and provides information in a format that the board reviews. It's a fairly thick volume that they look at, but then they have a scoring rubric that they use as they review the applications, and then they score, and then subsequently at the public meeting that Mr. Reed referred to, they're ranked, and then based on what the funding availability is, then a line is drawn at how much can be supported, and then we split the projects that way.
Thank you for that explanation. One final question. We've been hearing a lot in the news about the water in the schools being tested. Does that come under your purview at all because it's health and water?
The quality of water, indoor air quality in general, is under the auspices of the program in terms of application eligibility, and so a project to replace deteriorated potable water piping, for example, that has a lead contaminant in it would be an eligible project for doing the project itself. The program doesn't directly support the testing of the water in the building, however. That's actually the subject of recent legislation that CDPHE are taking on to assist school districts in through a grant process to start doing some more testing.
So they could, in essence, be testing, and then all of a sudden you get an inundation of right. grants for water systems?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Board Member Durham.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Owens, so does the staff reviews all of the applications, and then do you have a process or a set of criteria by which you rank these in or assign a score in some way that would provide a ranking for the board's consideration? Is that how it works?
Thank you for the question, Board Member Durham. No, actually what staff's role is to collect the information. We do provide insight to the board members around the application itself, but there is no preliminary ranking or scoring that's done by staff. So when the board members receive their summary books and when they look at the scoring rubric, there are sections for staff to comment on each of the categories, for example, overall facility condition. And staff comments will typically center around clarification that was in the application for the board members to look at. During the presentations that the applicants make, the best board members are able to listen to a presentation and then ask a series of questions, and there's a lot of back and forth to clarify the project. But staff itself, to answer your question, doesn't actually score those.
So you don't. You don't. There's no standard assessment criteria for the grants. So the grants then could be, the award of the grants could be subject to various kinds of bias, Is that a fair statement?
Staff will recommend what priority it is, whether it's a 1, 2, or 3. So again, 1 is the health, safety, security, technology. 2, overcrowding.
Do you fund anything beyond priority 1 this year?
We have not this year, no, sir. In fact, it's typical not to fund or to order to fund anything.
You're generally in health and safety.
Correct.
Which, is my memory correct that, at least perhaps not in statutory language, but at least in some of the rhetoric that accompanied the passage of this legislation, that rural schools and essentially school districts that had less financial capability to do projects should be favored in some way, or is that my memory wrong on that?
There is a protocol built into statute that requires developing what the expected match contribution would be, and it is dependent upon 7 statutory factors, most of which center around financial capacity. So if a district, an applicant, doesn't have that ability to meet that, if you will, the required match, there is a waiver process that the best board will use its discretion around based on information that the applicant provides to determine whether or not a waiver is approved. So the match could be greater than what's asked for, or it can be less than. If it's less, there's a waiver process that we follow.
So for better, for lack of a better comparison, the board could or should consider how much money a mill raises per pupil in its making its final determination, particularly its final determination on match requirement.
Yes, sir, that's correct.
And in your judgment, do they do that?
Yes, they do.
So I would share Ms. Rankin's observation that most of these, or there's a large number that are rural, and I look at, I guess Jefferson County's had some too, which they strike me as a district that's capable of paying for school buildings.
They can never pass mills.
If I could comment on that.
Well, the difference between not being able to pass them and not having the tax capacity to pass them, Dr. Flores, are two entirely different things.
Thank you.
If I could comment on that, yes. I'm the executive director of facilities for Jefferson County Schools. That's what I do sort of during the day. For our match is 76% of the overall amount, just based on, again, on the financial.
Your match would be whose match?
The district's match of the percentage of the grant is 76%. That's what it was this year. So we would have to put up 76% of the money that's being requested. For us, it takes away from our other schools because of the size of the match. And two, where we have critical needs, we have the resources that it takes to address these. Where some of the smaller districts that really have to choose between educational funds and capital funds don't really have that option.
So, I'm sorry. I don't want to be confused here. The grant you received this year in Jefferson County.
We did not receive a grant this year. We did not apply for. We have not applied for a grant in several years, actually.
So, okay, and that makes. And if you did apply, you believe that you would be required to match 50-70% of
76% would be if we wanted to actually match the whole thing. We probably would not go in for a waiver, as other districts might do.
What's the standard, maybe it's a question I should have asked first, what's the standard percentage match that you, what's the starting point? Somebody comes in, doesn't make a difference who it is, what do you anticipate seeing that you start, where do you start considering waivers?
It varies.
From what level?
It varies all over, just going off memory now, I believe it goes down to the lowest is probably about 25%. And it'll go up as high as 75-80%. Typically, for all of the districts, and we calculate all this prior to the application process starting, so all of the potential applicants know what their match is. And it changes from year to year based on a number of factors relating to financial capacity. But overall, when you look at all of the state, something a little under 50%, about 47, I think, is my recall on it.
So All right. Then are there different criteria, or does the law allow leased facilities to be considered for grants as opposed to owned facilities?
To be considered for financial assistance under the BEST program, the applicant has to either own the facility or have right to ownership at some point in the future. We do a very extensive review around that.
Right to ownership meaning an option?
A right to ownership at some point in the future based on a lease purchase accord that they might have.
Yeah.
So does this, is that criteria, and that's in the law, you say?
Yes, sir.
Does that criteria tend to discriminate against charter schools, which tend to have leased facilities or in large measure have leased facilities?
I don't believe so. The charter schools, and depending on whether it's a district charter or an institute charter, there's some variation. Many of the district charters, for example, are in facilities that are owned by the parent district. And the interpretation of statute is that qualifies for owning the facility.
Yeah.
There's a concern about reversion of the facility if the charter school doesn't proceed, and so the ownership aspect is fully addressed. The institute charter schools under CSI, we look at closely in terms of the ownership structure they have to ensure that they're eligible for it.
Right.
So the particular list that we're recommending today, we've vetted all of them, and all have met the criteria for ownership.
Is my understanding correct that in this year's grants, some of them were submitted to the Attorney General to determine legal eligibility on that point?
We routinely work very closely with the AG's office in questions that we have about interpretation of statute, and we did, in one instance, ask for interpretation of one of the applicants to ensure that we were reading it correctly.
And is that applicant, has that applicant been awarded? Are they on this list?
It's on the list. It's the Colorado Schools.
I'm sorry?
It's Colorado Springs Early Colleges. It's on the list, and it was, it's the one CSI applicant that we're recommending for award on.
And do you have that ruling?
Yes, sir, we do.
And the ruling was?
It meets the criteria for financial assistance as being owned by the charter school.
That it did, okay. So then out of these, out of all of the awards, of the $70 million that were cash awards, how many of those are charters? I tried to count through them, and I see two. I may be missing some. Am I missing some?
So we'll shortly go into more detail around that, but to quickly respond, there were out of the 48 applications that were reviewed by the BEST Board, eight of the applications were from charter schools. Both the institute and the one CSI, or rather the district and the institute, and then three of those are being recommended for award, with an additional school being recommended for backup project.
So, and you awarded to how many? I haven't counted them. I guess I could do
so
that.
So we're recommending 23 cash grant awards with three backup projects and five lease purchase award recommendations with two backup projects.
So you have 20 traditionals and three charters then on the grant. So of the $70 million, can you break that down? How much of it is charter and how much of it is not?
Just a moment.
Ms. Oaks, do you have that at your fingertips?
No, I don't have it, but I can recalculate that and get that to you to keep the conversation going, if that would be acceptable, since we don't have that calculation right now.
Do you have more questions?
Yeah, I'm not quite. Yeah, I'm not quite finished. Thank you. So then, let's see. Mr. Reed, you're appointed by whom, and the specific slot you fill on the board is what?
I'm appointed by the governor, and I fulfill the construction management slot.
Okay. And you're employed by Jefferson County?
I'm employed by Jefferson County as their executive director of facilities and construction management.
Okay. And Ms. Wright, you're appointed by this board, and you specifically represent?
Facility management and planning.
And you are employed by?
Sheridan School District, and I oversee facilities, transportation, and safety.
Okay, and Mr. Good, you're appointed by this board? And,
correct.
And you represent school boards, as I recall?
Correct.
And school boards get, what, one position?
Yes.
On the, on this, okay. And are there any representatives of charter schools on the CSI board? I'm sorry, on the best board. Excuse me.
No, the requirement for the 9-person board does not include criteria around charter representation.
Doesn't require, but it wouldn't necessarily exclude.
Correct.
That's a fair statement. So, I've had complaints from charter schools about a feeling of being treated less than fairly by this board. Is Mr. Owens, in your opinion, have you detected any of that bias in your supervision of this?
No, we have done analysis around the distribution of applicants, and in looking at the statutory criteria, when you look at the program cumulative impact across all applicants, the charter schools actually are fairly, given that this cycle, for example, they represented about 17% of the applications, and cumulatively they're about 17%, maybe a little bit less, but they have represented cumulatively about that appropriate percentage. So depending on how you look at the statistics and the numbers, as I've looked at it over the past year, I believe that there's an equitable process. Certainly the criteria that's used in evaluating them is very much a level playing field, and the charters participate in that.
So it's 17% of the applicants. Were they 17% of the awardees?
They came in a little under that. I think it was about 13-14%.
And that's in terms of number. Well, let's see, 3 of 20 would be, 3 of 23 would be less, yeah, okay. So it's over, certainly over 10%, 3 of 23. So it's a little over 10, yeah, about 13%. So we have 11% of the students in Colorado and charter schools. And so then the dollar amount, I guess we need to determine whether that is representative. I guess I could do it in my head here.
I have those.
Let me see if I can figure it out here. So we got 700,000 for early colleges, 49,000, so that's 750. And what was the which one of these others is charters? What's the third one?
So the charter schools.
It's El Paso Community Prep, it's CSI. And what's the one I'm missing?
Colorado High School.
Colorado High School. So that's Denver?
Correct. Denver is the authorizing authority.
So that's 400. So it's about a million. We're looking at a million one.
Thank you.
Of 70 million. Didn't quite hit, look like we quite hit 10%. Anything wrong with my math?
I think if we could have a moment to pull those numbers together, we could share those with you.
Well, you've got 698, you have 49,000, and you have 408, so 700, it's less than a million two. Math was always hard for me, but I did get through addition. So
your math is correct. It's 1.156, and that's 1.65.
So significantly less than the 10% of the student body that charters represent in Colorado. Do you find that troubling, Mr. Reed?
So having, like I said, I've been on the board for 4 years, and each year we've tried to make the process more and more objective, and I think we've been succeeding in that. As far as we look at, as we as a board look at each individual application, we look upon it as it's on its merits, and I think that's the appropriate way to do that. We don't really have a slot in there to discount for the fact that it might be a charter or not. I think that the evaluation that we as a board do is fair, and it's equitable, and it's reasonable to all the applicants. And same thing when we go through the waiver process. They're reviewed basically on similar criteria in a fair and equitable fashion. So I feel that if the mission of the board is to fund the most needy, then I think the process is successful in doing that.
I'll yield to Ms. Masnick if that's okay with you.
Madam Don't
Chair.
I get to talk?
Not yet. Yeah, it's up to you. Yes.
Not yet.
Seems to me not we're yet. Taking turns.
Yes. We'll let you know when it's your turn.
Thank you, folks. Board Member 12, I don't think you've had a shot at it.
Thank
I
you.
Do have some comments, too.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As I look at the report, I'm noticing, my colleague, Ms. Rankin, did a good job of touching on the regional representation within the list, and I'm just trying to get a feel for whether we need to do a better job communicating the availability of grants to districts like the 6th and the 7th, or if maybe the communication is fine, and what we're seeing is more a function of the best grant being best applied to those schools where the economics seem to fit better with the rural model. And if that's the case, then I will kind of relax knowing that my district is a bit more urban and suburban in nature. So I certainly do have communities of need within my district, but they tend to be densely populated, like Aurora Public Schools. We've seen a lot of growth in areas like Brighton. So can you speak to that? Do I have work to do communicating the availability to districts in the 6th Congressional, or should I just recognize that perhaps the best grant is best applied perhaps in the rural model? That would help. That insight would help me.
Okay. Now that's a great question, and thank you. The process that staff uses and the best board is to present at a number of different forums to promote the program, to highlight the advantages of it. We present at a number of different forums. We also have among our staff four regional program managers who geographically work in quadrants of the state, and they reach out to every single school district every single cycle, maintain a relationship with them around needs, around expectations for future grant cycles. So I think from a staff standpoint, we have a pretty good handle on, one, the needs, and two, what the interest level is for the district in coming forward with the best grant.
Thank you very much. That's a comfort to me. So, and I was remiss in not starting with thanking each of you for your service on this board. It's very much appreciated, and for your comprehensive report.
Thank you.
Board Member Goff?
Well, following up a little bit on that, Mr. Reed, hello. Very much empathize and follow carefully, of course, what happens in Jefferson County on all the conversations, and especially this last year. It's been pretty dramatic. In relation to best funding, I would ask, not that all of you have your, I know a little bit about Mr. Good's area too, but each one of you, as do what we here, represent a pretty unique context. No matter how you look at it. How have you found communicating with your school communities about how best works? And have the questions from, let's take Jefferson County as an example. I would think that the questions still persist, not only in regard to facilities, but just the whole place, the role, the purpose, the way it looks in real time in districts, the marijuana money. Have you come to a toolkit? How do you communicate with the public about having them understand how that works, that it's not what it's meant for? And I would think that with Jefferson County's community, there would be some need for explanation about why why the district does not necessarily qualify right out of the chute. There are lots of factors that are considered to make it impossible. But how do you talk to people who have faced more than one bond and or mill defeat over several years? And there are needs, as the work of the department in JEFCO surely clarifies brilliantly. So how do you talk to people about that? And then, unrelated, but maybe not necessarily totally, when was the last time that any of the emergency grants were employed statewide? Did we not have some emergency situations after the floods in 2013? And then every time we have a hailstorm like we experienced in May, you know, when you've got these buildings that are not in very good shape anyway, and there are unexpected incidents, how do you handle that? Does the board sort of come together on call once in a while and make some decisions that are like that, of that nature, on the spot?
Probably the easiest one to address immediately would be the hail issue and what we're doing about that, because that's a fairly mm-hmm. localized condition, pretty much hit us. Mm-hmm. And basically what our department has done is we've gone through, we've made sure all of the buildings are dry, and because of when it occurred in the construction season, it's almost impossible to get the kind of contractors that we want in to do our work. So basically we will carry our work through our maintenance work through until next summer. In the meantime, we'll be developing our plan. Right now we're probably just south of maybe $10 million worth of roof damage so far. And then we will get these packages out next year to do what it is. But there's a lot of analysis and everything else. The severity of the storm is such that with our own resources, we're able to take care of that particular need in terms of securing the buildings. And the fact that it occurred the week before school was out helped too, because that allows us to get in
yeah.
on the maintenance side and really do that work. Regarding the emergency grants of 3 or 4 years ago, a lot of that occurred up north in the Thompson School District in St. Vrain, where they really were significantly impacted by the floods. We only had one site that was impacted. It was one of our mountain outdoor lab schools, and we applied for and received FEMA money for that, for the work. Your other question about, I can't tell you the number of public meetings that I've been to where people have come up to me and said, well, where's all this marijuana money that we're supposed to be getting? And I tried to explain to them, one, about the program and about the fact that it's a voluntary program that you have to actually apply for the money. It's not something that's just distributed across all of the districts in the state. Obviously, $40 million just wouldn't really go very far in addressing the needs. So what I try to do is just educate the people as far as how the program works, what benefits it is to us and not. And as I mentioned earlier, because of our high match, we really have to be careful in terms of what we might pursue. About 6 years ago, we received a grant to install a sewer system up to connect our conifer schools. And, you know, this was kind of it was a safety type of thing, and we were getting a lot of pressure from CDPHE on the methodology that was being used. So it seemed like a good opportunity to put forth a grant application, and we were fortunate enough to receive it. And it went very well, and we certainly appreciate the help that we received.
Thank you.
So if I may ask a couple of questions. First of all, do you all also grant the $25 million to charters? or is that a different system?
Through the charter school capital construction program, the individual charter schools come forward with a request based on their need to the staff, correct?
Okay.
And then
so it's actually part of the $70 million, the small amount.
It's separate, entirely separate from.
Right, the business. But in terms of how much money charters get next year, it's $25 million plus the 1 point. So they are getting.
Right.
Nobody ever gets what they want, but.
It's initially based on a projected pupil count, and then it gets trued up during the year as the information gets refined. So the allocation. And as you can imagine, virtually every, I think there's one exception, has capital needs that they explicitly
yes.
identify. And so with that identification, we go about the process of identifying the number of students they actually project, and then the allocation is initially made. The payments are made on a monthly basis. And then,
is that included in your consideration for the charter applications for the $70 million?
It is
not.
How
much they're going to get from the...
The amount that is allocated under the charter school capital construction program is not a statutory factor that's used in evaluating the best grant applications.
Okay. If I'm not mistaken, the legislature passed a change in the BEST Act, which is going to allow for technology that will be next year. So your grant applications are also going to include applications for technology funds?
Correct. Thank you for the question, Madam Chair. The legislature did approve and the governor signed a House bill that incorporates into the BEST program use of BEST dollars for instructional technology.
Okay.
It's we're in the process of developing some of the thinking around how the rulemaking will have to take place. The BEST program has been around capital improvements, so this is a little different model that we're still evaluating, and we haven't entirely determined exactly how it's going to work. It is being viewed as a parallel program to BEST that will be.
Was there more funding added to that legislation?
There was not, as I understand, and I'm not entirely versed on exactly the final form of the legislation, but I understand it's will be drawn from some of the marijuana excise tax funds that's already in the BEST program. So we still need to sort out the details around it, and we'll be doing that over the next several months.
Explain to me on the lease purchase system, how many years are those agreements?
So they're all of the projects from the planning through the design through the construction are expected to be completed within a 3-year time frame. But with the debt service and the long-term aspect of the program is for 20 years. So it's
another 10 years before any of that money will end up being freed up for other projects.
Right. We have a detailed debt service schedule. There's an appropriation for the amount that is used annually. We're going through that process currently to determine, as a result of the borrowing cap increase, what that impact is on debt service.
Finally, Board Member Goff was referring to an earlier study. There was a study prior to BEST that was privately done. That was done by a nonprofit. I believe it was Donald Kay. And if I'm not mistaken, the amount was $6 billion of need, building needs around the state. I'm curious whether you've added up, based on the updating that you're doing to the need study, do you have a running total?
I don't currently have that information. I know there was work done earlier to identify the overall backlog across the state. I heard those numbers, but I don't have those currently. I don't know what that number is. As a result of the work we're doing, at the end of this 3-year cycle, we'll have a very good sense of that. So it was something, I believe, in excess of $6 billion, but I would have to look more closely at it.
So we're not getting ahead of the curve on this one?
We're not.
Ms. Oaks?
No, the results of the 2009 assessment that was conducted by the BEST team was 18 point. It was, at the time, I think it was 13.9, if I recall correctly, but projected to current time, it was 18.1 billion. So the six has increased dramatically, and then we haven't, as Mr. Owens indicated, updated that, so the 18 billion is probably incorrect as it was projected forward, because there's been other best investments through that. I think we have invested 1.2 billion, something in that need that has dropped that. Other districts have made other improvements, but then there's also been deterioration. So,
well, plus once you start adding technology needs, you're going to bump those numbers up quite dramatically, I would say. I will say that the process that you're using for identifying needs sounds incredibly familiar to what the large districts also do on an ongoing, Jeffco maybe, but so do some of the other large districts. I guess the other thing that I would say about the charter needs and the fact that we're distributing around the state, most of the charter schools are in the front range system. So we hope that districts are also providing in their bond programs, addressing the needs, as they're addressing the needs for their own schools, that they're also included in the charter school. I don't think that was part of the legislation that we had this year. But I think that, I know that one of my districts certainly always includes the charter needs, and I don't know what that level of participation is, but that helps to even that out for the kids. Board Member Massey.
I too have heard complaints. One of my frustrations is you come and tell us what you do, you know, which schools you are working for. What we don't know is who applied and didn't. Is there any way for this board to be informed of all of the applications? Who was approved and who wasn't?
Thank you for the question. Yes, we have that information. It's publicly available. It's on our website.
Okay.
We got it last year.
That's what I was thinking, and I wasn't finding it here. So
We had a total of 50 applications initially. Two were withdrawn. 48 were reviewed.
Some were withdrawn?
Two were withdrawn prior to the best board actually reviewing them. And then as we go through the ranking process, what you received in your board packets were the recommendations and then the backup recommendations. We certainly can, happy to provide you with information around the other applicants that are not being recommended.
Okay, thank you.
Any other comments or questions?
Thank you, Chair. I'm just getting warmed up.
Okay.
Thank you.
Steve, I don't have any more food.
You know.
Oh, wait. I'm sorry. I did have one other question, which not quite clear to me on the matching. It seems like it used to be 50% that for a new construction, they always had to come up with the mill of, you know, their own financing at 50% of the cost. Are you saying it's now, it depends from project to project, and how is that determined?
Right. If you want to talk about how it's determined, I think I can probably give you some examples from my part of the state. So, but, you know, Jim, if you want to talk about let me just jump ahead while Jim's looking. There's a fairly detailed process that I've become aware of in the last year since you guys appointed me, so thanks for that. But let me just use Steamboat as an example. There are three districts in Rapp County. If Steamboat were to apply for a grant, we would have to raise 80% of the money, whether it was for a roof or a new building. As Tim said, Jeffco is at 76%. There are two adjacent districts, one of which you guys helped out with some emergency funds this past year, South Route. Their matching percentage is 43%. The socioeconomics of South Route are far different than that of Steamboat, so their matching percentage is substantially lower. Third district up in my neighborhood is Hayden. Their matching percentage is 56%. They were one of the public schools that applied this year that didn't make the cut, but they would have to raise 56% of the funds. So it depends a lot on the, as Jim talked about, the wealth.
Who sets those numbers, though?
It's a formulaic approach that Jim can probably go through the details
based on their capacity.
Right. Mm-hmm. Correct.
Okay. So let me add to Mr. Good's comments. I had mentioned previously there are seven criteria that are applied, and these are in statute around how you establish what the match contribution expectations are. And the seven are per pupil assessed valuation, the district's median household income, percentage of pupils eligible for free or reduced cost lunch, current bond mill levy, unreserved general fund balance, current bond capacity remaining, and then bond election failures and successes in the last 10 years. All of that information is collected and is laid out in an algorithm that then results in a calculation of a percentage. And it runs anywhere from about 25% to about 75%.
It'd be interesting to know how that last part of the formula is figured into it. But anyway, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a couple of comments. One is I try not to be too critical of the legislature, but I think it's
I try.
But it's always easy to add a sexy new item and not fund it, like technology. Mm-hmm. And I hope the board would just keep in mind that leaky roofs are a lot more important to repair than buying shiny new computers, although you won't get nearly the credit for doing it. There's no reason to buy something that's going to get damaged by water leakage. It just, and I would hope you would kind of keep some of those basic tenets in mind. I'm sure it doesn't have the sex appeal or the public support, probably, but I think basic maintenance is a lot more important than bells and whistles. And I look at technology as being a bell and whistle. Secondly, if I have my numbers correct, in the last 5 years, and Mr. Reed, you've been on the board most of that time, charter schools have gotten $2.6 million and non-charters $411 million. Well, you do get to a level of disparity. Presuming I have my number right, I might not. You get to a level of disparity that I think has to raise the question of, are we really getting an equitable consideration? Notwithstanding, I think the absolutely correct observation that most of these charters are in urban areas, but keeping in mind that they're probably funded at less than 70% on a per pupil basis of comparable schools in the district, it kind of as a general rule. It could be less, but I think that's fairly close on a per pupil basis. So you might just find a way to from a formula standpoint, plug that into your thinking, because I think that may change some things. And I think as Ms. McClellan noted, I mean, in my district, I certainly hope Cheyenne Mountain will not apply on a need basis. It doesn't make any sense. I don't think Cherry Creek getting an award would make any real sense. That hopefully this money is designed really to help districts that simply lack the tax capacity to do the basic maintenance. And so if you focus on basic maintenance and tax capacity, I think you'll make a very sensible allocation. And I think when you consider charters, you need to look at the fact that not all revenues are shared equally. And I think that if you plug that into your formulas, Mr. Owens, you might find you're going to get a little bit different result. I'm still not comfortable with the result. It just, when you get to some of these numbers, they just raise questions that I don't think you can answer. So I'll leave it at that, but I would hope that all of you would work toward an equitable distribution. And I will say, I mean, I've been a few years ago, I don't know how many years ago, you made a grant to Edison, which is in the 5th District, and it's a very substantial grant, which they're going to have a groundbreaking or a ribbon cutting, I think, sometime this fall. And that's quite a facility in a very poor district in El Paso County. So you have to, from my perspective, you have to look at stuff like that and say there's clearly a benefit to what you all are doing and how you've done it, but you do need to add in one tiny consideration. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Board Member Flores.
If I could just for one moment.
Oh, please go ahead, Mr. Rong. Mr. Reed.
You know, one of the schools we're very proud of district-wide is the Rocky Mountain Deaf School, which was funded by the BEST program for significantly more than $2 million. I don't, I know that is it's a very successful and a facility that we're very proud of and a school that we're very proud of as a charter.
Is that in Jeffco?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. I think Edison was I don't want to say it's $14 million, but it's quite a facility. I hope to see you all at the groundbreaking or at the ribbon cutting.
Board Member Flores.
I just want to thank you. And I also want to just put this idea out. I know that your purview is not building housing for teachers in rural areas, but you do represent, meaning you come from districts and other institutions that do have some power. And I would suggest that maybe with urban renewal or somehow we get into the area of building apartments or for teachers, because I think that is a big need and why many teachers may not go to rural areas. And I think we need to, you know, spend the money, spend the monies for the marijuana. I know I have some ideas of how to spend it, and that would be a very useful way of spending monies.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, all of you. I'm not sure whether we should let you go or not. I need to ask my colleagues. It's 10 after 11. You've not had a break. Is that okay? Do you want to go till lunch? Or
we need to vote?
We're good.
If I may point out, we do have a second agenda item.
Exactly. That's why I'm asking. Let's just plow on. Okay, folks? Thank you very much. So,
Madam Chair, wanted you to know that you were so inundated with paper this time, but we did create the big binders for you with all these grants, and it did have the list of all the applicants, as well as the ones that were funded, and then Busy just sent out that link again. So it was probably just from the sheer overwhelming nature.
Did you say we did have a big binder?
There's a few actually left over still on the table over here.
So
that
we were supposed to pick them up?
It was in May, I think, but you had five Pueblo binders and
you had so many binders.
Greeley binders.
Yeah,
I think maybe
one
or two.
So go for.
Yeah.
If you want to see them, you can take your binder
with
you.
Get one.
Yes.
Yeah, and
so
I did send you the link.
And if you're cold, there's a
next item on the agenda is consideration of fiscal year 17-18 recommended best projects for award. Commissioner, is staff prepared to provide an overview?
I guess I believe I'm turning it right back over to Jim Owens. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Antes. And if you will, I'll turn this over to Mr. Reed, who's planning to present the recommendations.
Do you have anyone you can turn over to?
Assist him with the delivery.
Be brief.
You've got colleagues down there. You can just
pass the buck. I'm Madam Chair, members of the board, Commissioner Antes. On behalf of the board, the BEST board, I want to thank you for the opportunity to present this overview of our work this year. Obviously you've met our two members that are here. Also, Mr. Happenstall had planned to at least participate via telephone, but he was unable to. I also want to acknowledge other members of the board and the districts that they represent. Margie Ammons is a coordinating architect with Adams 12. Denise Pearson is a superintendent for Elbert County School District C2. Scott Stevens is the Director of Facilities for El Paso School District 8, and Kathy Gebhardt participated in this year's review. She's a member of the Boulder Board of Education, and her term has expired. I want to thank you sincerely for your continuing support of this program. The BEST Board serves as the vehicle that many school districts rely upon to meet critical capital needs. Without the program, the choice is a funding tug of war between educational needs and capital improvements. I think we can all agree that a warm, safe, and dry learning environment is key to educational success. On May 17th and 18th, the BEST Board met and reviewed 48 projects from 37 school districts and 30 counties. There were 8 charter applications from 7 counties and 1 from the Charter School Institute. The BEST Board is recommending 23 projects to be funded, 19 through cash grants and 4 as lease purchase. There are 7 projects whose match portion is contingent upon 2017 bond election. As a result, we have 7 backup projects, 5 are cash grants and 2 are lease purchase. And 1 of the backup projects is also contingent upon a 2017 bond passage. That being said, I'm going to turn it back over to Jim, and he can go into any detail.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Reed. And I think the opportunity to work with such a high-energy BEST Board has been a real privilege over this past year. And as we look back over the program's duration, it really is a great opportunity to collaborate with appointed members who are all volunteers who bring expertise in to a variety of different areas that is really, really results in a fair and equitable process that allows a very deliberate approach to making award recommendations that you're seeing here in front of you. In your board packets, would remind the board that there are narrative summaries of each of the projects, so you can read a little more detail about each of the projects that's being recommended, in addition to the summary spreadsheet that you, of course, have received. There's also a congressional list, a table, and a map that shows by congressional district which of the applicants are being recommended. And we put both the ones that are being recommended as well as the backup projects on, in part because historically, we've had this occur a number of times, if an primary applicant is unable to produce its match, well, then we need to go into the backup list. So having 3 backup applicants for lease purchase is important because there's a very detailed due diligence process that we've already begun, and so we need to verify that we would be able to use the funds that are being allocated. And then for the cash grants, we have additional backups as well, again, for the same reason, if the primary applicant is unable to produce its matching amount. So with these recommendations, we would be happy to answer any questions that you would have around them. I think in terms of where we go from here, I think I mentioned this earlier, for the cash grants, the State Board of Education is the final authority for the cash recommendations for the lease purchase. The next step is to present these to the Capital Development Committee, and that's scheduled for next Wednesday, September 21st, down in Colorado Springs. So we'll be making the presentation to them around the lease purchase recommendations, and then we'll have that'll be the final determination on all of the FY17-18 cycle. So happy to entertain any questions that you may have at this point.
Colleagues, any more questions, or could I have a motion? Board Member McClellan.
Just wanted to thank you once again, each of you, for your service. And with that, I move to approve the fiscal year 2017-2018 BEST grant recommendations made by the Capital Construction Assistance Board as set forth in the published agenda.
Proper motion. Thank you for the second. Any more discussion? Call the vote, please, Ms. Corson.
Yes.
Board Member Durham.
Yes.
Board Member Flores.
Yes.
Board Member Goff.
Yes.
Board Member Masnack.
Yes.
Board Member McClellan.
Yes.
Board Member Rankin.
Yes.
Board Member Schroeder.
Yes.
My microphone was
on. I'll ditto my colleagues' comments. Thank you very much for your hard work. I have done this at a local level, and it ain't easy. So thank you so much for your work.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Colleagues, surprisingly, we are now ahead of schedule.
Oh, good.
So we can go the rest of it.
No, we don't allow that.
So
let me just say we have exec session scheduled from 12 to 1. We can go into exec session now. We can put that off for a while and just breathe.
Let's go into exec session.
Let's go into executive session.
Okay.
Could I have a motion then, please?
If lunch isn't here yet.
Madam Chair.
Well, I thought you just said you wanted to go into executive session now.
Madam Chair.
Please.
There is one of the attorneys that is coming for executive session isn't planning to come until noon. We can see if
That's
she can come
okay.
early.
We're just going to go into exec session and
okay.
breathe.
And then take it at noon?
That'd be fine.
Okay.
Or we can leave. Okay. If we're in exec session, do we have to stay?
We could. Maybe we should just take a break and then
let's just take a
convene
break.
At noon.
That'll be fine.
Okay.
The next item
don't put it down.
Like is the consideration of the Title I multi-district. Shh. Thank you.
Oh, sure, it's okay if you are over there talking, but not
you're the one that pulled me back here.
Why, you want to stay till 6?
Yes. Online school district allocation pilot program. Commissioner, is staff prepared to provide a brief overview?
Yes, Madam Chair. I'll turn this over to Leanne M.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Leanne M.
We did have this last time.
Yes.
And we held it over for board members to consider, to have time to consider, because
yes.
I don't like to push things.
Yes.
So you don't have to make a very long presentation because.
Nope.
Unless colleagues have questions. Did you all consider this?
Yes, I did.
Yes.
Yes.
So what are you about?
Ms. Masnick?
I was wondering about some of the requirements, like how will the schools meet the attendance requirements, the, you know, login requirements? How do they prove all of that?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So that process doesn't have anything to do with the multi-district online
it doesn't.
Pilot, no. Absolutely, totally different process to establish funding for the School Finance Act. The multi-district online pilot for Title I is totally different.
So we don't have to consider any of that. The only question is whether we extend it to all multi-district online schools as opposed to just the pilot.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So we no longer have a pilot that we just do
okay.
it.
Yes. And it just goes through our normal system that we would use.
Okay. And we now have a system that makes this a reasonable effort to do the allocation.
Yes.
Thank you. Sort of a mass
yes. it would
programming.
Follow, it would follow the same process that we use for CSI and the School for the Deaf and Blind. So we've already got those processes in place in order to do those, and we would build this into that same kind of process for the multi-district online schools, which actually makes it more efficient and simpler for staff because we are not running it through a pilot project
right.
system. It just becomes part of the normal process.
So in that case,
Ms. Magnus,
I move to continue. No. I move to discontinue the pilot project and incorporate all multi-district online schools into the title funding allocation process on a permanent basis statewide.
Second.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions? Call the vote, please.
Board Member Durham?
Yes.
Board Member Flores?
Yes.
Board Member Goff?
Yes.
Board Member Masnick?
Yes, but I would just like to say, by the way, that I really thank the department for making this happen. It is the right thing to do for kids that these Title I monies follow them to the school they are being served at. Yes.
Board Member McClellan?
Yes.
Board Member Rinken?
Yes.
Board Member Schroeder?
Yes.
And just to make sure, that was for the, to discontinue the pilot? Is that correct?
Yes.
Thank you.
It's to discontinue.
To discontinue. Mm-hmm. Correct.
So that it,
yes. Make it real.
Yeah. Permanent. Thank you so much.
So, colleagues, what's the second one you wanted to do for lunch? I was absent when this decision was made.
I believe it's the financial transparency website update and subcommittee recognition that you would like to take next.
Mm-hmm. And that is item?
Now item 12.01. It was 11.01 until we added the morning exec session.
Thank you. No, 12.01 is the standards review. Yes.
She still had the wrong.
It's no, numbers. I changed them all.
You got them changed?
I changed them all.
Is it?
I don't know when it's standards.
So is.
It's 15, maybe. 14.
Oh, I'm looking at the wrong one. It is 11.0.
Yes. 14.01.
No, it is
11.01.
Yes, ma'am.
The standard. I have the revised. I have 14.
Anyway, that's not what we're doing.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was looking
we're
at
doing 14, yep. 14, which was 13 yesterday.
And it's going to be 25 tomorrow.
Go to 13. It might be what tomorrow?
25. Somebody introduce it.
I don't
and I'll
think
figure
so.
Out which topic we're on.
The next item on the agenda is an update on the financial transparency website and recognition of the subcommittee. Commissioner?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to turn this over to Jennifer Oakes, Executive Director of our School Finance Department.
Great. Thank you. So as you might recall, back in January, several months ago, so it's very fuzzy in my brain, but we did a little presentation for you all to sort of introduce you that this is coming, and now that we are getting close, we wanted to just take a few minutes to let you know that, yep, this financial transparency website is here. It will go live to the public on June 30th. This website came about because of legislation during the 2014 session that basically asked for a website for a layperson who's not conversant in financial information to be able to compare information on expenditures for school districts and schools and BOCES. And so we've developed, we partnered with BrightBytes to develop this website. And one of the things that we wanted is for you all to recognize the wonderful work of the district. So the legislation asked for the Financial Policies and Procedures Committee to work with us to design this and implement it. And we had some just tremendous support from districts during not only a subcommittee to work on this, but several pilot districts. And we wanted to recognize the work because we could not have done this without their efforts and their countless hours, but their expertise and their insight. And so they deserve some kudos. But then we're
but they
hoping.
Didn't come.
They did not, because there's coming from all over, and so we did not ask them all to come here, but I know that they will be touched by your recognition of them. So this is not an easy time of the year for finance folks to get out of the district.
Would someone like to list their names, read their names?
Are we sending them letter or
yes,
signed
we,
by the chair
have a,
or a plat or a certificate.
Certificates.
Okay. Yep.
Good. Move we honor them in abstention.
Sure, I have the names because
I
I'm not as organized. I brought a staff with me.
I have them.
I have
go.
Sorry.
Want me to read them?
Yes, please.
Yes, ma'am. Those to be thanked are Tracy John, Academy School District 20. Millie Livermore, Adams 12 five-star schools, Gina Lanner, Adams Arapaho 28J, Terry Buswell, Centennial BOCES, Brad Arnold, Cherry Creek 5, Christine, looks like Gathara, Cherry Creek 5, Stephen Clausen, Denver, Jeff Zolwinski, Denver, Jana Schlossinger, Douglas County RE1, Joanne Vernst, Fountain 8, Melanie Beck, Governor's Office of State Planning and Budget, Kathleen Askelson, Jefferson County, Sean Connor, Jefferson County, Suzanne Corbo, Jefferson County, Denise Pearson, Kiowa C2, Jonathan Levenquist, Littleton 6, Donna Villamore, Littleton 6, Michael Everest, Mapleton 1, Kara Baldamenti, thank you, Padre RE1, Jane Frederick, Pooter RE1, I'm sorry, Jane Frederick, St. Verali, St. Jane, St. Vrain, and Terry Kimber, Whitefield 3.
And that was Stephanie Corbo in Jefferson County, not Susan. Stephanie
Corbo. I'm sorry. Thank you.
Our thanks to all of them. And we are looking forward to a demonstration.
And then, so right now we're in a preview period for the districts. And so the financial officers have seen the data. They've posted the data on their website. The vendor pulled it up into the system to make it visible. And so now it's a preview that what it will look like to the public so that districts can go in, do one last final check of their data, so and to make any corrections if there's necessary. And then the vendor's also making any last tweaks in this last 2 weeks. So the system, there's a few little tweaks that they're still working on, so please bear with. But then I believe you all have that preview window as well, so that you can go in at your leisure and look at through this. I'm happy to sit with you or walk you through that individually as well. So we'll do a quick one today.
So I have a question. Based on what you just said, this has gone out to the districts. Will this be on district websites?
Mm-hmm. Great question.
As well as centrally or...
Yep. So on each district website, there is a financial transparency link to a financial transparency website for the district, and that is has a required a number of statutorily required items. This is a link to that's one of the items. So for each district, you can click on that. It'll go to their district view, but then you can also launch into the statewide view from there. So
From there.
So you can either come centrally off of a link off our CD page, or you can go from every single district or BOCES homepage or financial transparency page.
Two-way street.
Yep.
That's great.
Yeah.
It makes it a little bit easier for folks to access. Board Member Goff, you have a comment?
Finish your sentence?
Nope, go ahead.
Does CSI have an entry point in here? Or is it done by
it is
them or by school
anyway?
Or
so it is through CSI. Districts, so the charter schools would also have a financial transparency website and could link to this, but CSI would have the link for their schools. And so and we'll show this. You can get to, once you're on this page, you can either jump in directly to a school or you can go to a district and then jump down to the schools. So it's meant to be flexible.
Well, does Jeffco, for example, have a direct link to a CSI link that then takes you? How is the interplay? If CSI is its own district, are there statutory I haven't looked at this. I thought about it. But I've thought about it very well since January, I'll admit. But I just got to thinking about it the other day.
Yep. So the audit or the legislation requires each local education provider and define that to be districts, including CSI, BOCES, and charter schools, and charter collaboratives. So each of them has to post their financial data. And so they would also have that link to this centralized website. And so if I start with a charter school, a CSI charter school, there would be a link to get me to this bigger site, and we haven't tested, does that bring you to the school or does it bring you to CSI? So I don't know that detail, but it would bring you, that link would bring you to this location. And then again, I can move quite easily from district to school, back to district, and navigate that way.
So if a district had prior pages that have been established anyway that deal with whether it's their budget or their, mm-hmm. you know, like a live, real-time, dynamic, whatever website that shows mm-hmm. line item changes, whatever, if they make that, does this, is that, any of that superseded by this? Can districts still choose to put as part of their financial transparency picture as many pages as they want or reduce as they see fit?
Yeah, so one of the legislation requires a number of things be posted, your budget, the district's audited financial statements, check registers, investment reports, and then the statute also remove some of those, like the check register and the investment reports, thinking that this site will replace that. It doesn't mean that the districts can't continue, and we've heard from some districts that they want to continue that. The Financial Policies and Procedures Committee thought that we would take an opportunity, and they voted to standardize the financial transparency website. So number one, make it easily visible on the homepage, and there's a little icon or the words financial transparency that brings you, and then now it's a standard template, and so it should have the same look and feel from district to district to district. And so there's required elements, but then one of the optional thing is optional district financial information, so they can add as many additional links as they would like to other information.
On the department website, they can add as many as they want, or on their, it gets confusing.
Yes.
Both ways, huh?
Yep. So it is a financial transparency template that each district uses, and so on that district it will, you know, I don't have the order memorized, but
so
it'll have audited
if I'm
financials.
I'm going to go to Douglas County's and
yep.
push on the financial transparency.
It should show audited financial statements, budget, and then this link to this website, and then other district information.
Link to the department's website.
There's a link to the department's website. So one of the required links is to bring us the user back to this financial transparency website, but then they can have as many other links for additional financial information that they want to post at the district site.
Okay, that's
at
what
the
I was
district
saying. Yeah, thank you.
I
want
to just show something.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, like, they all kind of look like Jeffco's homepage. And so, up here, if you were to scroll down on Jeffco, and I'm just trying to yell so that the microphone. So, on Jeffco's website, they have a financial transparency page here.
Okay.
They would go to this. And then each district would be required to have this information here on the financial posted on their website. And then from here, what will happen is there is this icon here for financial transparency. When you click that, it goes to this new developed website that has been developed for the state. And so from here, you can then start drilling down. And I asked the board member Durham to pick a district, and he chose Cheyenne Mountain. So we can come down here to Cheyenne Mountain. You see an overview of the district, and then you can start seeing what is happening in that district. Oh. Spending per pupil. It breaks it down into the learning environment versus operations. You can do breakdowns here. You can see what their total spending is here. Construction, this kind of thing. You can see what the local versus state is versus federal. And you can start seeing more information on each area like this. What I do want to kind of point out here, okay, and then what I would like to also point out, which I thought was super, when I started poking around on this, I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. Let's do a comparison between Cheyenne Mountain, and maybe Colorado Springs.
Okay.
Colorado Springs. Oh, how about Academy 20? Is that okay?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're going to compare these two, and then we can come down and we see that one district is much larger. They have 36 schools. We can see that their total spending is relatively similar, and that, but it is lower than the state average.
And that spending includes whatever they spend money on, whether it's gifts, grants, donations, overrides.
Yes.
Federal grants.
Yes. And you can't, but it does break out the construction debt and other, so that it's not included in this pie chart up here, because some districts will be, if they get a bond,
it'll be huge.
They spend it all over that 1 year, it's going to increase that expenditure quite a bit. So that's why that is broken out down here. You can see what the local versus state versus federal is. So
can you do a search for the biggest?
Those two numbers don't match.
Well, this is over here is Cheyenne Mountain, and this is Academy.
No, but I mean, if you go back to Cheyenne Mountain, they say they're spending $8,000 a pupil.
Oh, and then the funding side.
And the funding side is over $10,000 a pupil. It doesn't match.
Mm-hmm. So that.
Why doesn't it match?
So that could be in terms of if they're building back fund balance so that they are spending less than they're bringing in. So when a district is trying to build back in the fund balance, or it could be the opposite, that they could have brought in less than what they're spending, and that's they're drawing down fund balance.
And that does happen, for example, mm-hmm. in the year of an override, you actually get an extra year's worth of that override. And different districts have different policies on how they can spend that money, because it's a one-time kick in the budget.
And one of the things that districts are working on now during this preview period is a narrative. So there's an optional narrative that they can use to provide context for it. And many of the districts have not yet drafted their narrative because they were waiting to be able to compare to their neighbors or see the data and how it will look before crafting that. So districts are working on that now. And that would be a great place for them to say why, you know, why they're spending down fund balance or why they are underspending so that they can build that up if that's of importance to them.
Is there a way to do a search that says which district has the highest per pupil spending?
There is not a search for that specific. The search is based upon either district name or school name or okay. address. There's also a search by the map. So if I don't know the name of the school, but I know, or the district, I can go in through the map as well.
What about, this would be neat, if it had a section comparing administration costs per district.
It does.
It does?
It does.
Oh, that would be great.
If we, so what we did is.
Asking you shall receive.
We came over here to the spending tab to compare these two districts. And again, it kind of shows us this overview. And then if you continue to scroll down,
right.
you'll see that under the total spending, you can see the breakdown between, you know, salaries and benefits versus all of the other stuff.
Uh-huh.
But then you can continue to drill down here. And so in the learning environments, you would see that, and the learning environment, if we said, well, what is that?
Mm-hmm.
Then we can click on this little I, and that explains kind of what that learning environment is. And then you can see that that is further broken down into instruction versus activities, student supports, and and all of that kind of thing.
Administration.
So then, if you keep going down, and you'll see that school administration for each of them is about 7%.
Wow.
District administration is a little tiny bit higher on Cheyenne, but that makes sense because it is a smaller district, therefore their economies of scale are not at the same level.
Now,
what then you can continue to come down, and you can see if we wanted to continue to go down, Cheyenne is spending a little more per student than Academy on athletics. Mm-hmm. We look at the school support, and then if I remember correctly, here it is.
Yeah, and go up a little bit.
There was a school administration, too.
So school administration here, $498 per student in Cheyenne versus $512 in Academy. And then if you continue to scroll down, you'll get down to where you will see, I believe.
Wow, that's great.
Oh, help me out. Do we have the breakouts of the
gifts, grants?
No, the salaries versus bennies.
I'm not sure if you can see that in the comparison, but if you go back to just one district,
right,
then you can see that.
And you can see it here in the learning environment here. And then you can compare operations. Operations being food, transportation, maintenance, that kind of thing, to do those kind of comparisons. Transportation is interesting. Look at Cheyenne's at $76 versus Academy's at $354, but that's based on the area.
Right.
So lots of very interesting information. And you can even, if you were a parent in a school district that wanted to see this kind of information, you could compare schools. You could compare a school in Cherry Creek to a school in Jeffco. You could compare a Denver school to one in Inglewood. So you can really start seeing some interesting information that is captured in this.
Given the assumption that each district and each school allocates allocated costs in the same way, and that's a huge, I mean, it's the same problem we have in any kind of accounting type of information. Board Member Rankin, do you have a question?
I do, thank you. Leanne, could you go back up to where it says student per student spending? Just pick one or the other. I'm in Boulder Valley right now just because Angelica told me to go in there.
So in the, to add Boulder Valley?
No, you don't have to compare. I'm just taking one at a time.
So you just want to go to one district?
Yeah. And go to the per pupil spending per student.
Okay, hang on here.
Okay, sure.
I'm not as, so I do have a little X here.
We got an email.
You might want to go back and pick, so get out of the compare and go back up and start by picking a district again.
Start kind of over.
Because when you're not comparing districts, you get a little bit more information.
Yes.
When you compare, it's a little bit higher level information. Just real estate on the page.
Here's an interesting thing, too, where you can download data. So if I'm a researcher, I can find all the data I want.
Okay, scroll down where it says per pupil spending.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then go to your little eye and click on that. And then at the last thing it says learn more, click on that. Okay, so as I'm scrolling down, I look at local sources, and I'm particularly looking for mill levy override. And that's going to really vary. And I can't seem to find it. But then I go down to this thing, exclusions, 1170 to 1174. What is that stuff?
So what the exclusions are is to avoid overlap or duplication. So when, for example, there is, it happens a lot with charter schools. So if a district gets the money in and then provides it to the charter school, so then it would be revenue.
Subtracted from
yeah.
the district.
So we don't want to double count okay. information to count it twice at the district and the charter school.
Got it.
And so we worked quite extensively with the FPP committee to exclude things so we are not double counting.
Okay. Yeah. So where do I find the mill levy override?
So this has been one of the questions that we've gotten a lot as we got feedback from other groups is, can we identify the mill levy override specifically? And right now our chart of accounts does not allow for that to be broken out. It's all local sources is combined currently, and so you cannot pull that out. So that's been
you
a question.
You cannot pull it out, but it is contained in there, correct?
It is part of that, but it is not coded separately and distinctly.
Are we working on that, or?
That was one of the items that has come up again in our discussions, and so it's an item that we've said, let's bring it back to the FPP committee to see if we should make any changes for, you know, version 2 or version 3. So that's a...
So yeah. when that gets brought back, would you also include where the district is on the limits for override? I'm not sure I said that the right way. There's a certain limit to how much a district can go for in overrides. I believe it's like 25% of something.
And we do, I will put that down on our list. There is a mill levy override report that we have that's separate and distinct from this.
Okay.
So you can get some of that information now. But
if I wanted to bother you,
note it.
Okie doke. Oh, please.
What were the other questions that you said came up besides mill levy override?
You're putting me on the spot. Well, one of the questions that came up during and was part of the legislation was gifts, grants, and donations. Mm-hmm. And so that is something that we do have the ability. We came before you all. The FPC recommendation is no changes are necessary to gifts, grants, and donations coding because we already have that ability to code to it. But because of that being spelled out in legislation, you can come here and gifts, grants, and donations is one of those pullouts that you can look at.
And that does vary. Who's responsible because it varies among the districts of putting it in, the district or CDE? Who puts that in?
That is a district decision of how they code, and do they code it at the district level mm-hmm. or do they code it at the school level?
So Ms. Oakes, I have a bazillion questions, and this is going to be my last one for now. But how do we, if we add all this up, I went around here, and I think it's fabulous for people that are understanding. I just want to make sure all the correct information is there. If you compare that to what we've been told is the per pupil spending and how low we are in all 60 states or whatever it is, mm-hmm. How do these numbers total tally compared?
Yeah, well, that was, you've sort of answered your own question. That was another one of the issues is how do we bring up or do we bring up that the national, you know, how do we compare on the funding and should that be something that's built into that? So that's one of those items, like we have the statewide average, should we have a national average? And so there's discussions on that, and so that is another thing that's, you know, to be discussed further, and how do we
Let me bring it up another way. I don't really care if it's on here or not, but I'm sure Leanne M. can tell us where we rate.
It depends on which data you're looking at. But I do want to point out one thing that we are kind of on the bleeding edge of this from the state perspective. And in August, we are going to be doing a presentation in Washington, D.C. for the National Center for Educational Statistics mm-hmm. to all of the other state agencies about what Colorado has done in this regard. And it'll be a very interesting discussion to see what some of those questions are and how this can be also utilized to meet the ESSA requirements around some of that reporting. So a lot of work, we're on the bleeding edge. This is version one, it's not gonna be perfect. And there, what we're anticipating is that we'll get lots of feedback about what additional things would be interesting. What can we also provide?
And how did you get invited? Was it because of the visibility that Colorado has in being in the forefront of this?
We said, you know, NCES, you might be interested in this. And so we submitted a proposal to present it, and they said, yes, we are interested in this. Yeah. And we are a member on the, what is that thing called?
It's the Fiscal Coordinators Roundtable.
The
FITWIG. So with the,
the
Financial Transparency Working Group. And so that is in terms of the ESSA regulations and implementing that. We're a participant in this FITWIG, the Financial Transparency Working Group, and have presented to that group this information. And because of all of the information that we have with this, we were able to be one of the early presenters to say, well, here's what we could do with the data that we have, and helping to work on how do we comply with those ESSA regulations, and this has set us up very well so that we can comply with that. And going back to the exclusions, that was part of some of our guiding discussions about how do we exclude things, is that we look to what do we exclude for those NCES on the national comparisons, and we adopted that same methodology. So when we are compared to the national or to other states, that it's consistent with the methodology that's used to build those national data.
So they don't duplicate.
So it's apples and apples as much as you can. As mm-hmm.
Yeah. Does every state have a chart of accounts that's identical? Is there a national one?
There is a national chart of accounts, and ours is, we modeled ours after that, and so when they make changes, we make changes accordingly. Okay. Other states do it to some degree. Ours may be more aligned than others, but ours is quite aligned with the federal.
Do you have some more questions?
I just have one. I mean, the next thing that came to my mind, and I know this is just way far above what we can do, is Alyssa, I really would like to see the frameworks lined up next to this.
So would a lot of people.
You mean put in
accountability? $14,000 per student and no accountability? I'd like to see that.
One thing that we are still lacking, and it is no fault of ours, it is part of the legislation, that we do not have the authority to tell districts, we'll collect your data for you and populate this for you. They have to post the information on their websites, and then the company goes and gets it.
But it's uniform the way they all
it's
post it.
It's uniform the way they post it,
okay.
But it would be so much more efficient for them and for us if we had that capability. So.
But then we need the $5 million to update our system.
No,
for
actually
security.
We don't.
Okay.
This is totally separate. They could just do it through their normal processes.
Okay.
But that's another topic for another
day.
This
is outrageously good. Thank you.
Board Member Goff.
Thank you. When does this go public? What's the target date?
June 30th, Friday. So the legislation has it July 1st, but Saturday is not necessarily the best day. So it will be turned on the 30th.
And all the other states will
do? Who's,
well, they don't have this requirement.
Is this committee, is this the hub, so to speak? Who's going to do the trainings for whatever? I don't want to be pessimistic, but I'm looking on the real side here. If this literally goes public, so So you've got everyone, anyone, community members who pay attention to this stuff and who have questions, and they don't know how to answer them, which why do we have a message out there that our students are, whatever, $6,000 each funded at that, and then we see a district here with 15, we see an 11, we see a 9, you know. I'm just concerned about this getting out of control with a lot of questions that don't have an immediate place to go for a clear answer. I have you all, I would assume you have.
Yes.
So who's helping everybody with that? The media, the public,
so,
the public relations messaging behind this. Where do they go for help? Who in each district, whether it's these pilot people or not? Who do you go to get the clear answers from?
Go forth.
So we have it's a layered approach, and we've thought of a lot about that. That so on that template of the financial transparency, there's a contact information so that you have a person and a phone number and an email that you can contact at each district right below this link. There's also the vendor, BrightBytes, has a help desk that's one of their requirements, and it is staffed to answer questions and help users with the system, but they also have been working with the data for some time, so they can answer basic questions, but then they all have the contacts of how to get back, because the districts are those best suited to answer the district data questions. So we have the sort of on the escalation, the system side, a whole help desk arena to help users directly and then get them back to the right contact of the district to answer the district data questions. And then we're also in the process of developing a user, finalizing a user guide that will help, you know, we've worked to make sure that it's user friendly and that you can get in without any training and so forth, but we're also creating and refining a user guide so that will be out there for some self-help type things as well. So we've sort of taken a layered approach to that.
Board Member McClellan. This is a question. Thank you so much for this. This is so great. I asked a question during an earlier update on this topic, and I just wanted to confirm my understanding. Where you would have significant fundraising done by, say, a PTCO, that doesn't appear here, does it? Or is it once the school spends those dollars, would that then be incorporated, or is that kind of invisible?
So as with many of the questions, it depends. Okay. The answer depends. And so it depends on how the district treats those. And so many of the PTCO type organizations are external foundations that are external, and so that they receive money and spend money, and that would not be in here because that is by a separate organization. Some of the districts, some smallers, may be part of that, and so the district would have that accounting and be part of that. If, say, one of those foundations or PTCOs gives funding to the district and the district then spends it, it would be in here, and it would be in the gifts, grants, and donations, so you could see it called out there, what they receive, and which school it was charged to or spent by, if that's appropriate. So and all of the spending, regardless of source of a district, will be captured here, and all of their funding will be captured here. But if it's an external body that does things on behalf of, then it would
not. The foundations, which in fact the Boulder Foundation gives money both to schools and probably spends money outside. The PTAs or O's or whatever they are raise money in tithe. So they actually give a certain percentage of the money that they raise to the
tithe?
To the extent that they spend their 10%. Own money on teachers, are then required to give 10% of that to schools that can't afford. Thank you, Jane. They can't afford to raise money. So we have to be careful in terms of what we say these districts or schools actually have, because they're
lots of combinations, permutations, decisions that are made at the district level and possibly at the school level that could maybe significantly or maybe not significantly change the spending level.
If I might ask just a quick follow-up, just to give me a clue so that when I'm talking with constituents about this issue, and just some for my own edification, if a PTCO is working directly with a principal for particular needs at a particular campus, in the event that that doesn't filter through the district level, there's a good chance I'm not going to see it here. Am I on the right track?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. That helps my understanding. Thanks.
Yeah, now we're late.
Sorry.
I have another quickie technical question. Sorry. Yeah, is that when I get up and when I actually look at the website, my computer is silly. I'm having tech challenges today. I love this, but I'm having a personal problem. Anyway, is this website, is this CDE? Is CDE the major conduit? Or is this connected to the state of Colorado?
This is a vendor. So CDE, the legislation specifically had CDE contract with a vendor, and so this is on their website. We will link to the vendor's website, but it is not a CDE hosted. We didn't develop it specifically based upon the legislation, but contracted. So CDE was a facilitator for this work.
So on the 30th, do we go to CDE and then find this?
It will be linked off of our website.
Yesterday in the budget presentation, I talked about capital expenditures for IMS and operating expenditures for IMS. This is a perfect example that the legislature appropriated capital dollars to us to implement this system. Then they also, in the fiscal note, included ongoing maintenance costs for us through the years so that we will be able to continue to license with this company and maintain this system in ongoing years. So perfect example of what we were talking about yesterday in IMS when we need to build big projects and systems, that's what that capital is for. And it might be a one-time cost, might be over multiple years to do that, but then we were able to also tell them and demonstrate we are going to need ongoing maintenance for this also.
That's
great.
So we need to find something this sexy looking
for our budget request. Is this link that we got that goes live, can we still use that ourselves with the password ongoing?
Yes.
And then is there any way besides comparing, you can do the whole thing of the whole state?
I don't know how, but yep. I think you can. So Leanne had brought up, you see in Boulder Valley, you can download the data for Boulder Valley.
Yes.
There will be a link. It's not live yet, but it will be there by June 30th. So at the front page that you can download the whole state and look at the data. You know, that's the very detailed spreadsheet data.
Is it in Excel format?
It's in Excel format. And then there's some high level statewide statistics, not to that level of detail for each district, but some high level stuff, and they're refining that. We just looked at it yesterday and approved, so they're busy working on that right now. So that will be one of those new things that will come in. And then just to clarify, on June 30th, there will no longer be a need for a password. So this is just this preview period, so it's district personnel can look at it, and you all. On June 30th, it will just be a link, and it'll go live.
Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
Be sure to charge other districts. Have it for it.
Cordial,
it came from Colorado.
To,
yes. Love to. An executive session has been noticed for today's state board meeting in conformance with 24-6-402-3A CRS to receive legal advice on specific legal questions pursuant to 24-6-402-3A Roman numeral 2 CRS. The matters required to be kept confidential by federal law or rules or state statutes pursuant to 24-6-402-3A Roman numeral 3 CRS. I know. I was like trying to. Yeah, thank you. Channel Rebecca, and I couldn't.
Oh, right on.
I know.
So I thought we already have one. I'm sorry. I move that we go into executive session.
Great.
I said let's go into exec bed, and you guys said no. What else can we do?
I don't know. I was just.
It wasn't my idea.